So I'd like to talk a little while, and then I'd like to invite you to ask questions if you like, and have an engagement so that we can all be awake together here. Okay. So yes, we are in some interesting times. That's a euphemism I've been using, interesting. And for many of us, especially myself and my own experience, what is happening now is been happening most of my life, if not all my life. And I think now it's with our wonderful technology, everyone's getting to participate in the horror and the joy, hopefully, of life and humanity that we are living today. And I see everything as a wake-up call, as you were saying, Doralee, about the bell, that everything is the bell. And to wake up and to continue waking up. And of course, we want to hurry and fix it all. You know, just like we want, maybe when we entered our Zen practice many years ago, we wanted to fix it, something about ourselves, something about the world. And so we might have come in with that mindset of fixing something and making it work better. And oh, well, that's a great aspiration, right? You know, to want the world to be better and to want ourselves to be better. And do better, live better. So I myself had the same aspirations and still do. But I understand now from my practice, I think over many years and taking vows over and over and over, that the aspiration is a continuous journey, a continuous practice. And while we look for results and successes and accomplishments, I think those things are of the world. But if you're on a spiritual path, the aspiration just continues, the vow just continues as life until life is over. While there may be some things that appear to improve and change, there will always be something else that will come along, and it'll be the bell, and it'll wake you up, and then again, your aspiration and your practice comes into being, is stimulated and initiated. So I think I came into practice because I really had already worked in changing the world as an activist and as an educator. I helped start some alternative schools for Black children in Los Angeles. The school is still there. Marcus Garvey School is still there. I did a lot of community work long before I came into Zen practice. I also practice in Nichiren tradition 15 years before I came into Zen. So then I'm in Zen for another, what, 18, 19 years of Zen. So what am I doing? You know, what is that life? What is it that, you know, I always ask myself, I always examine, you know, what is it that I'm doing, and what is it, and how am I living this life? So, I found immediately when I came into practice that the suffering of in my life, I even asked one of the teachers in a Shosan is where the abbot or abbess sits up and allows you to ask questions during practice period, and many of you probably have done this. And so I asked the question, you know, am I ever going to get rid of this wounded feeling, you know? And the teacher said, probably not, you know? And I was like, kind of bowed and backed away because you back up for the next person to come in. And but I, when he said it, I didn't quite understand it, but I knew he was saying something beyond the words. And as I practiced long enough, you know, I begin to realize that my life, what is happening in my life, is my workbook. And everyone has a workbook. And you have a workbook, and I have a workbook. And whatever's in there, when you turn the page, is another chapter, right? Or another whatever happens, an episode. I don't know if anyone here maybe written down some of your life, you know, a little bit of autobiography or memoir, you know, or something like that you might have done. And as you notice it, it just evolves and morphs, and it doesn't really have a concrete container, because so many things come into life that kind of make all the other situations and circumstances very different. So many of you probably have done Way Seeking Mind Talks, and every time you do a Way Seeking Mind Talk, it's different. By the time I got to Way Seeking Mind Talk number 5, it was totally not the talk of number 1, right? Of how I walked the path and my life and how I got there. And I was telling the same maybe circumstances and experiences, but how I was telling them was so different and had a different quality. And even though I was telling some of the same stories. And so I wondered what that was, you know, what was happening. Was I, you know, did I lie in the first place, or am I lying now, or, you know, what was happening? And what was happening was this capacity to look at suffering and to witness it and to observe it in the midst of it. And so before us is talking about the suffering. When I got to Way Seeking Mind Talk number 5, I was talking about the suffering, but not in it, but witnessing and observing it and understanding how it was working on my life, and not being so outdone with it's not going to end, like what when the teacher said that it may not end. Not being outdone with that, but understanding that this was the practice. This was life. You know, that's what he was teaching me. This is life. And these are the things that are coming into your life. And so for all of us, there's things that come individually and there's things that come collectively into our lives. So, Doralee mentioned that I wrote a book, and you know, I keep saying you know, there are enough Dharma books in the world. Why do I need to write another one? But somehow these things just keep coming through that I feel I want to share. And some of the books are for some people, and some of the books are for others. So I don't know what book is for what person. You know, you choose that yourself. But this I wrote The Way of Tenderness. And I found in teaching, I was teaching at Green Gulch with Abbess Fu Schroeder, and the students there were really wanting to be there. Oh, want to be there with Zinju, and we're going to study the Way of Tenderness. And the entire practice period, they were so agitated about the conditions of oppression that it was very difficult for them to sit, to do zazen, to even do all the way up to the sesshin. They were interested in taking down the institutions. And while I honor that, you know, intention, I to teach them to come and sit. And I offer that to my students, especially as people of color, to come and sit. And to eat the food, to sleep, to write poetry, to look at the trees, and to smell the flowers, and then go back out into the world with that renewal and that rejuvenation. And well, they weren't being rejuvenated whatsoever. I was like really afraid for some of them. And I talked to them in the last week of the sesshin, some of them. And, you know, they were so concerned about there weren't any teachers of color there. And I said, well, you just missed 2 months of one of them, you know, so, you know, you're so busy out there, you never got to really experience me and enjoy having a conversation with me. And so it was very interesting. And so I sat with that because I felt like, oh, a little bit disappointed, but also, you know, in the end, many of them wrote me letters and they, after they left, they got it. You know, it's kind of like after you don't have it, you get it. And so they left and they wrote some beautiful letters. But I wrote The Deepest Peace. And so as you read that book, if you ever get it, it's poetry and a non-traditional haiku and prose. And in my life is in there too. But I wrote the book so that when you read it, and I tell people they'll read it, but you won't go, what? You may go, what? You know, because I'm not really throwing any kind of concepts out at you or, you know, things like that. And mostly there's probably concepts. However, that wasn't my intention. I wanted to create something in which when there's disruption in our life, when there's oppression, that there is a way to access peace, you know, inner peace within you. And so when you read the book, my gift hopefully is that when you read it, that peace will be felt, that it will be an experience of peace. And so even though the book may, I don't know how, what size the book will be, but you might want to go from one page to the other looking for some profound something, but really the profound thing is going to be in the experience of reading that book. So that I really don't want to hear the concepts coming back necessarily, but what you experience. So with the other books, I hear people talking about their, you know, concepts coming back and what they think. And that, and really, I didn't write those books for that either. I was hoping to also create peace around those topics of in sanctuary home, homelessness and belonging, and create peace around race, sexuality, and gender to change the dialogue from just a political critique to looking at the appearance of these things and the conditions of these things in our lives and how we can possibly, I think, bring new wisdom to them rather than just spouting out. You know, I always tell people they want me to come and do some talk on oppression. And I said, you know, Angela Davis is alive and well. You can call her up. You know, bell hooks is alive. All these wonderful teachers who really have the analysis down are available. I definitely have an analysis, but I am a Dharma teacher. And so if you talk to me, I will talk to you about these things in the Dharma. I will not teach you oppression 101. And people get a little upset. I wrote it in my book too, The Way of Tenderness. I will not tell you how to be, you know, in the book, no matter who you, people of color or white or any, I won't tell you how to be, what to do, what to look at, how to move, because all of these things, guess what, are impermanent and they change and they don't fit in the circumstance. So if I tell you something in the book in 2015, when the book was written, it might not fit in 2020 when you get ready to try and do that thing. I've seen it happen. Go, oh, no, no, no. Things have already morphed from that place. So I understand that and wanting to be led and guided, you know, so that we don't have so much disruption and we don't cause suffering and we're not, you know, part of the suffering. So I feel like the best thing to offer at this time is which I've been offering, is we know that everything that comes into our lives is actually for us, even though it doesn't feel good all the time, but it's for us and it's for us to, you know, awaken in it. If we understand that, most people will not understand that because they're not doing this particular kind of practice. They understand something else. And that too is okay, because I too understood that at the time before I came into this practice. But I do, I have settled with the disruptions of life, and I have settled with the horror. I have settled with the joy. I have settled with the surprise, all these things, because I see how they work on my life. I see how they transform. I see how we connect as collectively, as people. I see the beauty in it. I see the unknown in it, the darkness in it, all of it in it. And that just, it, to me, just makes life fascinating. You know, I get happy at times. I have to hold back, you know, people are very sad. I have to wait for people to grieve and be sad, because I somewhere in me, I know that what is happening is for our good, and it will, whatever good is, it will continue and continue and continue and continue. So I wanted to read something, and then I'm just going to open it up, read something about that I wrote in the Way of Tenderness, The Deepest Peace. And you call it The Deepest Practice, which is The Deepest Peace. The Deepest Practice is a good title too. So this is a part, and it's called, it's just an excerpt. We are to be undone. So here we go. It's hopefully short enough for you to feel into it and to breathe into it. And I invite you to do that as you breathe and as you sit and listen. So we are to be undone. This is life. There's no getting around it. We unravel over and over again, and life gets disrupted. We are thrown off, and we face the unimaginable. It's sobering ending up in a place that we thought we'd never be. And in that strange place, we are quietly undone. We're not who we thought we were. We burn away, and then immediately we want to sweep up the ashes or whittle and sand the charred pieces to make a smooth mound of life. A mound that, if breathed upon, would come undone again. We create mountains from the shadows left behind by disruption, only to find out after climbing such mountains, we could have just walked through them. We struggle when the waters of our life are disturbed and our reflections appear distorted and unfamiliar. We run from the waters. Being undone, we discover we've been fooled by wishing wells and have mistaken the fire of desire for radiance. We're stunned. To be undone is a mystical occurrence, a state of being in which we are rendered eyes opened to the unknown. We see, hear, smell, taste, think, and can do nothing about it. All doing is done. What are we to do when we feel lost, a stranger in our own lives? We go through it. In the undoing of life, silence stretches into eternity, revealing stars in the dark. Revealing stars in the dark. All right. So that's one of the pieces. Thank you for listening. And I think this is a good time to open up for discussion and give some time for dialogue and comments, or, you know, it doesn't have to be about what I talked about. What you might want to share about your life and what's going on, and that's fine.
See, so, I think Jim has his hand raised.
Okay, so I can't see hands. So what the best thing to do is, because you might be on another screen, which Jim is, I guess, because I don't see him on my screen. I think because I'm not going to look. That's too active for me. I can't stay concentrated enough to answer. If you could just unmute yourself and say your name and then ask your question and then mute back. Will that work? Okay.
That will work.
Okay.
Well, I'm just moved by my name is Jim, in Valley Streams Sangha, and I was moved by your prose poem, I would call it, I guess, that you just read, and how much it captures the moment we're in with you know, COVID, and here in California, I'm not sure if you're in California, but here in California, we are housebound now by COVID and by fires, by smoke. Uh-huh. And I guess you laid out such a, it's hard to come up with a question, but because I think I, well, anyway, I guess what I'll say is, how do we show other people the joy even in the midst of this?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I now see your name, and I see the little hands, the raised hands, so maybe I could use that as well. Thank you for the question. I don't think I talked to some of my folks that sit with me. No, I always talk and smile about suffering a lot. And I think it's a matter of your life itself expressing it and not showing someone how to be it. So when someone to me is suffering and are they in grief or what's happening now, I'm with that. I feel that too. I'm not like, oh, I am in my grief. I am in my tears around anyone, especially today. Let's say you mentioned Jacob Blake. I was just in tears. I didn't want this for young people younger than me. This is not what I worked hard for, you know, all my life. So, but I'm there. I'm in the grief. I'm in the sorrow. And the joy that I feel is an inner joy that this experience is being shared and talked about, which when I think his name was Tamir Rice or Michael Brown or, you know, any of them, they weren't talked about in Dharma Circle. Their names weren't mentioned. So something is changed and different. I don't know exactly everything or the reason why, but I feel that that brings me joy, inner joy. And I've gotten in trouble with this one, but when our elected leader or whatever happened, when he came into, you know, the 45th president came into being, I that morning I was ecstatic. I was like really happy, but no, I didn't run down to the Zendo, right? Because they would be misunderstood. But what I was happy about was I saw that it would be so horrible that everyone would understand and see, and that's exactly what has happened. It took a long time, but that's exactly what has happened. Now it will continue, you know, and I think we'll continue to see ourselves as a collective. Not everyone. We will have to see for others, you know, and that's the way of life. We see for those who can't, right? We breathe for those who can't. We walk for those who can't. And so that's how, and so that joy is an inner joy. It's not a celebration. It's a joy of seeing awakeness and awareness, you know, that kind of joy, you know, that, you know, I could feel alone in my situation as who I am or be joined. You know, I feel more joined, you know, not because of what people are saying, but I feel people see now, you know. And they don't have to do what I do now because now they see. but to understand, and hopefully that this undoneness will also awaken, not just see me or see out or see objectively, but see subjectively, see inner, see have an inner insight, an insight to your own life, that this should drop you deeper, you know, should bring you to that unknown, you know, if you're still in that place of knowing and are wanting to know, are grabbing on to know, are trying to get it in the mind and all of these things, that will interrupt your capacity to love, because the experience is going to be intellectual or, you know, mind driven. So I heard you say show. So that's where I responded to. I want to say, I don't have all the answers. I just respond to everything. And my aunt used to say, you have something to say about everything. And I was like 5 or 6 then. So I've been doing this for a long time. So just want to say, this is how I've experienced my life. And I only talk about the Buddhist teachings, only the teachings that I have experienced and know to be true in my life. There's a lot of teachings I haven't even experienced yet, and I don't talk that much about them. You know, I just like, wow, that's interesting. They're still on the page for me, you know, and I leave them on the page. And maybe there's a time later in my life I'll develop a relationship with that teaching. But mainly just be with people where they are. You know, sometimes I want to say some things. I'm definitely a Facebook teacher. I call myself kind of interrupting the mindset sometimes that I see on there. And I go in and I wait. I wait and wait. I feel the energy, the collective energy. And if people are just screaming, I just wait, you know, wait and wait and wait. And then when I do write a post, it takes me an entire day to write a paragraph, because I'm very, very much concerned as to how my words will impact anyone, you know, and if they don't impact well, I take it off. I just don't. It's not the purpose to create suffering. So I think it's just walking as you are, walking with your practice. You don't have to really say anything. I don't really have to say anything about my joy or sorrow. It can be seen if you're looking and felt. And so I think that is the key. People don't have to be joyous either. You know, I'm not calling for people to be joyous. That's an understanding that I've come to about suffering, and it's taken, how many years did I say, 15 in Nichiren, and not 18, okay, to come to that. So I'm not going to walk up to my neighbor next door and say, can't you feel it, the awakening? You know, not. So, but anyway, because they won't know what I'm talking about.
Thank you very much for your talk, Reverend. In addition to all of the multiple pandemics we're feeling outside, I've also recently lost a loved one, and thus the door to the undone hasn't just been open for me. I'm sitting in that space. And it's a new experience. And it's wonderful. Yet sometimes I have difficulty discerning between being in the undone and at peace in the undone and apathy, whether it's apathy or it's allowing for the undone. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Could you address that, please?
Yeah, very good question. Thank you, Barbara. Yeah. So, So my experiences apathy is without feeling. I don't know what that feels like. I don't think I've ever, sometimes I wish to be a little bit apathetic to give my heart a rest, but I don't know that experience. I'm going to say that right now, that apathy to me, if I were to feel it, I think I don't feel anything, that I'm numb. I would associate that for myself as being completely numb and not engaged and not engaged and without feeling. So when we're undone, we don't like to be there. We don't like that. We want to solve it. We want to fix it. We analyze it. We want to critique it. We want to get rid of it. We want to oppress it, gut it out, whatever, you know, these kinds of things. So even wanting to make peace while you're in it is still trying to do something with it. So remember, all the doing is done. So no doing, just no doing, and not even making peace, not even making harmony, are making loving kindness and all these things that we aspire to, but to just be right in the undoing and see where it will lead you. So you can't see where it's going to lead you. It's like you're the groping in the dark, or reaching the whole teachings of reaching behind in the dark for the pillow. You know, so you're reaching, but you're not really going to probably come up with anything. You're just reaching, right? In the darkness of these things, you don't know where you are. You're just reaching. So just the reaching alone, just staying with the reaching alone is, to me, the place to be. So the place to meet and greet darkness, to greet the unknown. So I felt fortunate in some way when COVID hit, because I had a practice in which I could sit and go, wow, what, you know, what has happened here? And I didn't answer that question. I just like sat with it. And with all the murder, more murder on top of the COVID, I was like, whoa, you know, and the things we're hearing. So sitting with that and knowing, you know, that, these are the things that are, everything is born of the darkness. So this is born of the darkness. You know, this is what has been born, what has come. And so, and I'm writing about this now. I don't think this writing's going to end. So there may be a book for you, one of those writings. But I think that to just be there in the darkness, meeting it and greeting it in the undone, that to trust that the awakening and the awareness will be expressed in it. Because for me, it has. I'm writing from that awareness and awakening. I don't want to write about things that have already been written about. I want to use what's been written about as a foundation. I want to use the Buddhist teachings as a foundation, but I want to talk about how it's expressed in life and expressed when there's like a don't know there, you know, how life is expressed. Life is unknown, right? It's just unknown. We really don't know how we got here, really. There's some biological answers and even some spiritual answers. We don't really know anything. We don't know where we're going. So it's a dark experience, life. But is that dark experience necessarily one of negativity and horror and dread? Or is it, could it be one of mystery and discovery and awakening and awareness? Could it be that? And that's what I have had to make it. I had to make darkness and blackness an expression of awareness and awakening. Otherwise, I would just, you know, no sense in living in this bad life, being dark and black and all that. Right? Why? So I come to that. And I came through that through my practice, through the sitting in zazen, being still, stopping. You have to stop. You have to be stopped to be prepared to greet this darkness that is unknown, that we reach for, that we try to fix, and feel like if we don't do something, we're not, we're participating in the suffering. And that's when it comes down to, do you trust what you do? Do you trust how you have expressed your life and contribute to the collective of life just by being who you are? Some people just overwork themselves to death in different movements. They're in this movement, that move. They don't know. Every time a movement comes up, they're in it. And so you have to back up and look at where your suffering is and dwell in it, in that darkness, and see where it takes you, what movement it'll take you to. It could be something you're going to start. You know, you don't know. You never, it's just how life is, right? We don't know. And I hold on to that. And I just laugh when I know. I kind of laugh about it. Like, I think I know how it's going to go. And then it doesn't. And I just say, oh, there, again and again and again. So I would definitely invite you to stay in the undoing for as long as it, I would say the darkness is making an it, wants you to be there. And maybe sometimes we've left prematurely. So then when we're there again, it's going to take twice as long. You know, we've known that one ourselves, right? Like, oh God, like if you had a cold, I should have stayed home. And then you get, you know, more sick later. So it's that kind of thing, you know.
Thank you.
I hope that helps. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Meg, you're raising your hand.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Speak. You can unmute yourself. I'm not used to watching the panel. You can unmute yourself, Meg.
So it may be, and I have to sit with it, that your answer to the last question may address part of what I want to ask. But I just spent the last week in retreat, and a lot of the Dharma talks and talks over the week were addressed COVID and the angst of that, and addressed white privilege, and addressed some very tough things. And one evening, going into the last sit of the evening, the speaker asked us to, as the practice for that sit, to listen to the cries of the world. I learned later that this is much his issue, that he needs to learn to do that because he doesn't. But how it affected me was that I find the watching humankind's inhumanity to humankind, violence to one person to another, be it physical, be it cruelty, be it psychological, it affects me so deeply, so profoundly, that I couldn't sit with that sit. I did, because I thought it was something that maybe if I sat through, that it would bring me, come to another kind of place. And then I didn't sleep that night. But I find that the cries of the world, the pain of what's going on, very, very difficult. I'm a hospice chaplain, and I don't find the suffering of my patients to do that for me. I sit with them in the midst of that all the time, and they find comfort in my sitting with them in the midst of that. And it doesn't do the same thing. But when it comes to mistreatment of people, of violence, of boy, I just really hard for me, and I don't even know what question to ask so much as to put that out there and tell you that I think that part of what you said earlier is some of what I needed to hear, but I'll leave it at that and let you, I want to hear what you have to say.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Thank you. So to hear the cries of the world, of the earth, takes some preparation, you know, and I felt why I walked the path of Buddha, the way of Buddha, was a part of that preparation for me to be able to hear the cries in my life and in the world in a different way than what I was hearing before, where, like I said, I would hear and I would suffer, but then it was, you know, around oppression, I would experience it, and then I would still talk about the same thing, but not in the same way. So the process of meeting and greeting, you know, this darkness, this life, this unknown, you have to be prepared for it. And so in usually when things come to us, it stops us. So it is related to what I was saying to Barbara. It stops us. And so that stopping is exactly what these things are trying to make us do. I was very happy when they said, stay at home. Because I thought we needed to go into silence in relationship to some of the hate talk coming out of the White House. You know, because the more you respond to that, you stimulate it and you invoke. We also are invoking that name again. So that may be our president. Keep invoking that name. Keep invoking that name. You know, and invoking that rather than witnessing and listening and seeing what is coming out of this kind of darkness. You know, that it's not a bad thing, it's a thing that's here to stop us. And so that we can awaken and be aware, are we prepared for that? But even before we're prepared, are we willing? Is there a willingness to hear the hurtling cry? Are we willing to hear that and take that, not become it? We don't have to take it in and eat it and become the cry. We don't have to do that, even though we may. I'm very sensitive, so I understand what you're saying. When way, way, way back years ago, when the Jim Jones kind of genocide thing happened, that is still with me. That stayed with me and stayed with me and stayed with me and stayed. I could not let that go. It would not go away. It would not go away. Fast track 10, maybe 15 years later. Now, I was in Los Angeles when that, I'm from Los Angeles. And so I was in Los Angeles. Then later, 10 years later, many years later, I'm walking. I went to a chiropractor. I'm walking in Oakland. And because the doctor said, just go walk. And I said, oh, there's a cemetery. I'll go walk over there. You know, so I went walking in a cemetery and I went to this, I don't know why this particular part, it's a gigantic cemetery, go to this place. And there was the memorial for the Jim Jones people who died and all their names. I almost fell out. I was like, whoa. And I just started walking and you know, and praying in a circle around that plaque, all the names. And just like felt like they had been calling me. You know, like I have been hearing them and they called me to that grave site, like over a decade later. Now, who would have known? Who would have known? Not me. And so maybe things aren't that direct all the time, you know, like something will come and like, boom, there it was. But when I did that, I felt like I had answered their call and answered that scream of what had happened to them. For some reason, it just started going away? Because I mean, I was just in this for it was like over a decade.
Well, I spent long big hunks of my life studying the Holocaust, trying to understand it, trying to wrap my brain, when I was in theological school, I spent a long time. I wrote papers. I mean, Jim Jones, that was something that really impacted me for a very long time.
So I just wanted to hear, I heard you say, rack your brain. And that is exactly what you cannot do when you're meeting the darkness. Because if you're doing that, you're going to miss the love that's arising and the awakening and awareness that's arising. You're going to miss it. So you don't, I don't rack my brain around this.
No, thing. I was saying wrap. But rap. Yeah, okay, got it.
Uh-huh. Or even wrap. Don't wrap your brain in it. You know, but to allow an unfolding. In that unfolding, we have this practice where we sit. This is it. Trust this, where we sit.
I didn't have this back then.
Yeah, I understand. And now we do. You know, we have this way, you know, of sitting and being. I think I was always in something because I don't know, I was a religious child. I came, you know, not a proselytizer, evangelical child, but definitely I had a friend who died early, and she was six, and she lived around the corner. And I said, like, what? Children die too? I was, like, shocked. Like, oh, shit. And I went to my mother, and I said, children die too? And she said, yes. And I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I said, so everybody's going to die? Like that. That was my first time. And she said, yes. And I said, so for about a week or two, almost a month, I stopped talking to her, my mother. And she said, what is wrong with you? And I said, I'm mad at you. You know, she's like, well, what are you mad about? I said, you knew I was going to die, and yet you gave birth to me. She just laughed. She was like, oh, okay. So it was, but from then on, birth and death became this kind of, oh, then what is it that, what are we? You know, and I would look in the mirror trying to figure, see it. And what are we doing here? I mean, this is when I was a kid. So I think this kind of, it doesn't even have to be a religious practice, but just a way of stopping, first being willing and then stopping and then knowing. And knowing that this darkness of life is here for us, not against us. It's not here against us. It's here for us. If we can understand that, it's going to be hard because our minds have been impacted by many other traditions, you know, about where darkness and the evilness and it's been demonized. I even say darkness has been dehumanized, you know, so that it's not part of the human experience any longer. It's not, you know, oh, get rid of that. That's not part of life. You know, life is light, you know. And so, and then we're like trying to find that light too and trying to be that light. And it doesn't last, right? Because the light that we think of and dream of and see is from our mind, you know. So, or even if we try to give light and be light, we can't. It's hard to do that. You know, it doesn't work. I can't give you light. You can't give me light.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So that has to come out of your like now, out of these times. Can it get any worse? Yes, it can. To help us awaken. You know, and not awaken to just race, but awaken to everything about life. And how we're living on the planet together, you know, and soon maybe the planet won't be here for us, right? He's giving us news like, hello, fire, hello, hurricane, hello, keeps giving us news every, more often than not these days, right? So, you know, what is it asking for? What is being asked of us as human beings? And yes, maybe we have to start in this world right now with, you know, the hatred around race, sexuality, gender, religions, you know, class, all these things that are being used as weapons, you know, in the last draw of breath of supremacy, you know. And that breath may be long. I wrote that recently. It may be a long breath because this thing is large and puffed up, this beast. It may, you know, I don't expect it to happen in a new president. I expect it to happen in a new society, you know, the change. A new president will do the legislation for us, but we still have to do the heart-opening, heart-wrenching, that we have to do the work. It's us. It's us. Is us.
Thank you so very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, I'm not going to get these in order. Chris Horton. Hi, Chris. And then next would be Richard. Okay. Oh, it's almost time. Okay. Chris.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for your deep and tender heart of practice. It brings sweet tears, deep, deep faith, and thank you. We so much need your voice in these times.
Well, thank you.
I mean, we need all of us, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, your work too. Yes, I know your work. All right, Richard.
Hello. Good evening. I'd like to thank you for your poem. You know, I feel, I think one of the reasons I started coming to Sangha and getting more active in my Zen practice was because I noticed, I guess, my own undoing and that I had no tools to deal with it. So I really felt that poem. And also, you know, I feel the sentiment of interesting times, because, you know, I've talked to my friends and, you know, there was an uncomfortableness with me because, you know, in some cases I didn't feel the dread everyone else was feeling, because for me, you know, I talked to a lot of my friends and I was saying, you know, because some of it wasn't a surprise, which feels kind of dark too, which is, I guess you were talking about the joy of it is that, you know, other people's eyes are opened, which is kind of interesting in its own. But also I wanted to, I guess, pick your brain on, you know, one of the positives for me of, you know, if there is a positive of COVID, is the fact that, you know, I get to work from home more often. And it's interesting because, you know, most of this happened during COVID, so we were at home. And so part of me was thinking, oh, this, you know, I kind of get a rest because, you know, because then if this was happening and I had to go to work, then I had to be out in the world and be around coworkers and maybe some distant family members who, would be more, you know, on the opposing end of where I stand. And, you know, I just questioned how when this ends to go, I guess, out in the world, right? Because right now we're, you know, where I guess the country is so polarized, we're mostly seeing it online and in groups on Facebook. But what happens when this all comes back to, you know, the workplace and being out in the open again?
Right, right. And I think that everything is changing every week and every moment. You know, we're only seeing what we're seeing, where we are, right, in this moment, today, whatever time it is on this day. And so, but at the same time, something else is being shifted. So we don't know. So this is why you have to be prepared in some ways for this, not prepared and I'll know what to do, like a prepared kit, like a kit with tools necessarily, yeah. But that you have honed the silence in a way that you will be able to hear what you need to hear and see what you need to see with whatever comes up tomorrow, right? Like that. So it's like we kind of lost our senses of, as human beings, you know, how we do sense some things, but we're helped out a lot, like our sight, like at night we have street lights, you know, or things like that. You know, we have all kinds of things that help us. So we've lost some of our sensing. So the sensing, just sensing within and knowing, kind of like if when you're in a dark place like the woods, you have to sense. You know, when we used to live that way, we had a heightened sense of that darkness of the woods, you know. So we also had a heightened sense of the darkness in our lives as well. And so we used that every time it was time. So you have to have the sensory, you have to have the medicine in place and the willingness and all of these things in place. And that's what I think I practice. I hope that's why others practice, to have this this way of being in place, so that whatever comes, you know, whatever comes, you're like, uh-huh, you know. And I find myself definitely in the pain of it. I'm a human being in the pain of it, you know. I cry till my eyes are swollen. I cried just recently last week about it all, and the killings, per se, the COVID is hard to, you know, but it wasn't a hopeless, you know, cry. You know, I still feel prepared to die of COVID. I do. It'd be hard. I'll be scared, but I'm prepared to meet that. I'm prepared to meet it. I'm prepared through my practice. If this practice didn't do all that, then I think I would have long gone, you know, because it would, like I tell my students sometimes, I say, oh, let's just go to the beach and have a picnic if this is not working, you know, because if it has nothing to do with what we're doing every day and living and engaging life, then it's not for me. So, you know, I just found myself on this path and I stayed on it long enough to become Dharma transmitted. That wasn't the intention. And I tried to fight that Dharma transmission. You can talk to some folk, I really tried to fight it. But, you know, another long story, I wouldn't tell you that one now, but this whole way of being willing to face it all, and to, no matter how it makes me feel, like the emotions are there. But that's not what I'm not trying to root myself in the emotion. I'm rageful, but I'm not rooted in the rage. I'm not rooted in the rage. You know, we're not necessarily broken right now. In humanity, some people are saying we're broken. I think we're just human. We're not broken, we're human. And we're seeing the degree to which the degree to which we can cause suffering and the degree to which we suffer. We are really seeing it. That's amazing to me. It's something for me to sit with and look and feel. And I feel fortunate I do write about it. I like to paint too, if I could, or sing and dance and all of these other things to express that, you know. And I'm a drummer, so it used to come out in my drumming, my Congolese drumming. So there's this many ways to express it and to interact. So again, we don't know when we wake up tomorrow morning, or maybe before we wake up, or maybe right now, something's happening and we're going to wake up to maybe another something. You know, there's always going to be something to take the place of whatever was there, because these things are bells, like Doralee said, to wake us up. If we didn't have these bells, we done snooze, we'd be Rumpelstiltskin, we'd be gone, decade after decade, you know? So this is life. I was told that as soon as I started the practice. This is life, and it wasn't what I wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh no, I'm in the wrong place. Like, you're alive. You know. So I think it's really important to assess where you're at in here. Even if you're fearful, that's human, that's fine. You're human, you're sad, you're grieved, all those things are right. But are you ready to meet? What is your preparation? Have you stopped? You know, I was pretty surprised it took me so long to cry. I said, oh God, I hadn't stopped. You know, I felt it like while I was crying, like, ooh, you forgot to stop. You're too busy, you know, doing whatever you do. You know? So, and I think with friends, wherever they are, grief, sadness, anger, rage, whatever they are, I am there with them. I do not share anything else because I feel those things too. To walk along with those who suffer, I'm suffering in the same way. They're reflecting my suffering. Some people are reflecting our tears. Those Black mothers are reflecting the tears of the world when they cry. Those are our tears. Even if we can't cry it, they're crying it for us. For what is happening here. They're not only crying for what is happening with their sons, they're crying for what is happening in the world. Or their daughters. So this is the only reason, you know, for me to do what I do, and that is to share with you and others. And looking at this world and walking in it together, even when I'm sure we disagree. I'm sure we do, you know. And I'm sure we agree. And I'm sure maybe we don't have any agreement or disagreement, you know, but we do have life together and we're breathing here together. And there is a collective a darkness that we are all working with. A collective darkness that can be, if we treat it in the way that it is. I was thinking of darkness as a mother, as a creator, because it gives birth to things, right? And if we can think of it in that way, you know, as something that it's giving birth, as a creator, that all that we feel about it may tend to fade and we can get back closer to the earth of it, of this experience of life in darkness. Life is dark because it's unknown. That's kind of scary. Oh, I don't want to be in the dark. I don't want to be. One of my neighbors said, I don't want to. I don't want to meet darkness. I don't want to invite da da. And I said, yeah. And that crosses over into dark experiences, dark things, and dark people. That crosses on and on and on and on and on. And if we can just bring that all back in and invite what the darkness is giving birth to. And it's giving birth to everything, and we're dealing with everything. Even if we don't want to, we're still dealing with it. Even if we don't want to. It's going to be there. Darkness not going anywhere. It gave birth to you. Not going anywhere. It's walking with you. Let's walk together. So I think I'm going to end there. Yeah.